Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Is that why so many people are worried about what they might term as biased algorithms, the way that an algorithm is used by people? What is inputted by a person might be biased. What is inputted by another person might be biased. And trying to come to something that is completely neutral. I mean, that's very difficult to do, isn't it?
I very much agree. And I think much of the bias goes back to the data which the algorithms often are fed. If we take there are often classic examples. If we take, say, the word scientist, then and we go on to the web and we search for pictures of scientists. Because of cultural bias, depending on what culture we come from, most of the pictures we see will have be of dead white men. The world is much bigger than white men. And yet an algorithm doesn't necessarily have the sensitivity to understand that it is looking at a very biased collection of pictures and so will believe what it's given. It doesn't have a kind of higher ethical process, and so that bias will tend to be amplified in the results it performs. So when you next ask the smart algorithm, find me a picture of a scientist, it will tend to favour in favour of the statistics of the data it's been given. If those statistics are skewed or biased, it will amplify that. And we obviously are going to have to work very hard in order to try and produce unbiased algorithms which take these sensitivities into account. Fortunately, many of the big commercial players and a lot of academic work is going into trying to do this. So teams at places like Facebook and Google and so on are working very hard to try and remove these sort of almost cultural biases from the data the algorithms are using in the first place.
So how does all that feed into the criticism that some people have of the way algorithms and artificial intelligence are used, for example, within the police? The police allocate certain resources to certain areas because they're told by a computer that area is deprived, there is more likelihood of crime taking place there. The criticism is that that reinforces stereotypes in that area.
Absolutely. In principle, of course, what people are trying to do is use very effectively a finite resource. If we turned that problem slightly differently and said we had a finite amount of money and we're allowed to spend it on buildings to make those buildings safe for earthquakes, we'd preferentially spend that money in regions where statistically earthquakes are much more likely to occur. And I don't think anybody would question that line of reasoning. Of course, the moment you start bringing that to putting more police in areas with higher crime rates, you're actually beginning to have a much more complex story, and that's because it involves human beings. And where algorithms are good at is dealing with data, but that data doesn't have an emotional context behind it or sensitivities. And the depths of understanding that we need to go to in order for algorithms to understand the emotional impact and the social impact on us as human beings, it's just not there yet. So I think AI and machine learning is extraordinarily good at analysing data, working out very smart things about how you would best use a finite budget. In some of our own work, we're, for example, trying to work out how, given a certain budget, you can have maximum impact to prevent malaria. Again, these kind of more health implications, I don't think anybody would be too concerned. But the moment you begin to start looking at things to do with policing and crime and so on, there is always a danger. What you are again doing is potentially reinforcing social stereotypes. The problem isn't necessarily with the machine learning. It's been done rather clumsily, and perhaps the worst you can say is naively. The problems are actually deeper, and they are societal problems, which I'm afraid even AI can't solve.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, November 19th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our monthly. It's the third Sunday of every month. Early time, obviously, so we can accommodate listeners who are in different parts of the world. But this is our global Sunday talk on racism. Purpose of this broadcast, again, as always, to make sure that we emphasize that racism, white supremacy is not a problem that is isolated to just one specific spot on the globe, that this is a worldwide plague of white terrorism, that all of us should be using our time and energy to try to solve this problem immediately. I think it's important for non-white people around the globe to exchange views on this problem, look at patterns in terms of what whites are doing, how they're operating. We can learn a lot about the system of white supremacy and just what it means to be classified as white. One thing I did want to share before we get to callers, get some of their views. There is some sort of issue. This is not a Gus failure. This is something beyond where the last three broadcasts from this week, basically the last 3 days since Thursday, they are not loading. I have gone to the site. I've uploaded the file. It says that it has loaded, but then it's not being added to the stream. So iTunes does not have the three most recent programs, Workplace Racism from this week, our new book club on the wisdom of psychopaths, and the broadcast from yesterday evening, the compensatory call-in. Those, the archives for those three programs are available at Black Talk Radio Network, and they have been available since those three respective programs ended. Those programs are also available at SoundCloud. They're also available at YouTube. So any of the folks, if you normally get the archives via iTunes, if you had any issues, I am aware of the problem and am looking forward to getting it corrected quickly so that those three programs and all of the subsequent work will be available at iTunes as well. But it is available at those other places. If you have questions or if you have a problem, let me know. Thanks to the folks who said something about this at Facebook and what have you. Hopefully it'll be taken care of. And this has been a problem intermittently through the years that the cows has been on, where for, I think someone even mentioned it on the program yesterday, that out of all the podcasts and programs that they listen to, the cows is the only one where there's something odd where programs or downloads or streams sometimes are not available, or you get all these crazy error messages and that sort of thing. We've had those sort of tech issues for the duration. I chalk that up to the system of white supremacy. That's it. If you have a question that you would like to ask, take advantage having listeners from outside the U.S. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-COUND. I think, Andrew, on your line, if you could use your mute button, because we're picking up a lot of background noise. If you could mute your line, that would be great. Thank you kindly. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you want to take advantage, ask a question. That would be my recommendation. Always good, as I said, to hear different views from Black people, non-white people around the globe. Also, quickly, just make sure that you remember the audio segment that we heard from the beginning of the program, where they were talking about artificial intelligence and different algorithms that are being used to program different computer software and what have you. And I think the terms that they were using were bias, prejudice, discrimination, those type terms. We had talked about that before. Just put a pin in that. That was Stephen Roberts. He's a professor of machine learning at Oxford University. So we'll talk about that before the broadcast wraps up. We had three of our different participants had random things happened within the last 24 hours when they were going to be in with us, and then they had to reschedule. I know Alicia and one of our other June Allen, she's been on the program, JuneAllen.net. She has her podcast. She's been with us many times. Said she actually was working. I think both June and Mary, those are the two, June and Mary, where they both were working to try to move things around, and it still failed to be with us. Hopefully they'll be back. I guess we only have one more time before the new year, but hopefully we'll try to get them on with us for December. I do think we have Andrew with us on the broadcast. Andrew, are you with us, sir?
Yes, Scott. Can you hear me okay?
Crystal clear. Thank you so much for sharing some of your time. Glad to have you on with us. Any topic or subject that had been on your mind that you wanted to make sure you shared with listeners before get a question or two in?
I mean, the biggest one that I can think of, not necessarily happening here, but one nonetheless that is being discussed here, is what's happening in Zimbabwe. At the moment, you know, with what's happening with the coup or non-coup, and with what I heard today with the army saying to Robert Mugabe to step down and, or else risk being impeached. So so that's the last thing that I heard of that. That's clearly quite a big thing for blacks, you know, stroke African people.
Absolutely. They've been reporting on that for most of the week. That's been pretty significant news. The most recent report that I saw, the one that was in the New York Times today, it said that he has officially stepped down. It says, reiterated some of the exactly what you just said, that he kind of had this ultimatum. It wasn't like he was resigning of his own volition, that, you know, if he did not step down, he was going to be impeached. Interestingly, the image that the New York Times has, it's bright, colorful image. It's captioned, "Zimbabweans prayed for the spiritual redemption of President Robert Mugabe during a Christian rally in Harare on Sunday." And in the center of this prayer for Mr. Mugabe's spiritual redemption is what looks like a white woman. In fact, two white women, it looks like. But I mean, like, the exact center of the photograph, white woman holding hands with black people. To me, this answered at least one of your questions that you were talking about with regards to this incident. Is there any evidence that whites, racists, are involved directly or indirectly in this event? I would take this photograph. Might be one bit of evidence. Have you seen anything else to suggest whether whites are involved with what's happened?
You see, I mean, I'm looking for it. I've not seen anything so far, because you see, what the little bit that I've learned is that the military leaders, or at least the older ones, were alongside Robert Mugabe in terms of liberation of, you know, that happened a few years ago when Robert Mugabe took power. Apparently, what the military leaders are scared of is his wife taking power, who's not apparently a Pan-Africanist, right? And then the whole country moving away. And I'm saying apparently because, you know, people can profess to be anything they want, you know, as I'm talking about the military leaders, you know, or they may start off being something, and 40 years down the line, they're not necessarily that anymore. But nonetheless, his wife, in their eyes, apparently would be a clear break from a Pan-African, if you like, history. And I'm using that term, history, right? So, so the person they wanted to take over from Robert Mugabe, apparently that's the man that Robert Mugabe just sacked, right? So apparently to position his wife to take over. So this is apparently an internal a thing going on, but how it's been reported, you know, but that history is not, it's been absent from, you know, from what's going on. Bearing in mind that Zimbabwe's got, one would have thought that the history would be shown on TV, but that's, but it's the history that's been absent. And that's the bit that I find interesting, that European, you know, that we've not seen Robert Mugabe, you know, the reasons for him coming to power, you know, old Zimbabwe, and the fact that, you know, the English used to use Zimbabwe in the same way that the Americans used to use Cuba, like a playground, right? So none of that history at all, as we've seen it on the TV. All we've seen is what's going on now. None of the history. And I think that in itself speaks volumes, that we've not seen any history of that country. But yeah, but why is that? You know, and so I think that's been quite interesting. I think that's the take that this country's having. And let's not show any history. Let's just show what's going on. Now, they've not even really made a big point of what the who the military leaders are and what their ideology is. And I think that in itself is quite telling as well, because, you know, the back, you know, as I understand it, the background of the military leadership over in Zimbabwe is a Pan-African one. And that's the history. And that's why they've not bothered talking about them, you know. And the people themselves seem to be quite happy with the changeover from one, if you like, old Pan-Africanist to another set of old Pan-Africanists. So it's interesting. But nonetheless, I think that white people are, my view, and I've not seen it yet, but my view is that white people are quite happy to see Robert Mugabe go, but they're not, I don't necessarily think they're replacing Robert Mugabe with a puppet, and that's what they would like, but I'd like to know if there's any evidence of that. Maybe somebody else could bring that evidence.
I am not certain myself. I know one thing that I did want to make sure to emphasize from the book we just finished, Neil Postman's Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk, in his other book that I read, Amusing Ourselves to Death. And in fact, I would suspect it's probably in two books. I just have not read How to Watch TV News, but I suspect he touches on some of the same points. Mr. Postman says that when you have major events like this happen, particularly things that happen on the other side of the planet, someplace that's not close by, you probably don't know as much information about things that have happened, you know, in your hometown or your state or wherever you happen to reside at. Context becomes very important with regards to understanding what happened today and having some grasp of what's happened there over the last year, 10 years, 40 years might be very beneficial in making sense of what you're seeing or what they're telling you is happening there today. Excellent point for the situation in Zimbabwe. Robert Mugabe is not a black person specifically that white people all around the world loathe, like they hate him and have been talking bad about him for decades. If you look back over the time that he's been there and even understanding, well, why is that? What has Robert Mugabe done that has upset so many white people? And just the more you understand about the system of racism, white supremacy, the more you'll understand why white people loathe him. And that might even go to your question in terms of why they have not touched on a lot of the history of Zimbabwe and when Robert Mugabe came to power and what his life and existence has been about in this part of the world. If you talk about that, you are going to have to talk about the history of white supremacy on the continent, Zimbabwe specifically, and Robert Mugabe's role in fighting against that. And it's just been my experience, whites, they do a really good job of eroding that history, eroding that context, so that you do not get accurate information about white supremacy as a global system. And then once you understand that, then you might start asking some of those questions. Wow, have white people done anything to try to engineer this? Are white people doing anything to try to destabilize this area? Are white people doing anything so that they can manipulate who's going to take his place? You would have a lot more questions and questions of a suspicious nature about all of this. And I think if you can, as you say, if you can deprive people of history, deprive people of context, they will miss a lot of those questions. They might not even, you know, pay too much attention to what's happening with this event. And I guess the last thing I would just get in, it is kind of lower. Like if you look at the global scheme of things that are being talked about, I would say like Kevin Spacey, Harvey Weinstein, who they're accused of molesting today, that's like a little higher up on the tier in terms of what people are paying attention to. This, I don't know what it is over in the UK. Is this like a top thing that is being talked about over in England right now?
Can you hear me, Gus?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, people are still talking about all that Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey, especially Kevin Spacey, because obviously, you know, he was the, I can't remember what his position was, but he had some sort of working relationship that I don't quite understand with quite a well-known theatre called the Old Vic in Waterloo. Waterloo's in central London. Yeah, I mean, people are still talking about that, and loads of other people are coming forward, and there's, you know, a lot of feminists coming forward to get some sort of mileage out of this type of thing. You know, and there's some black people getting involved in that and taking up that as a discussion on some black radio shows. I just think it's just all rubbish and nonsense, if I'm honest. It's just a distraction from stuff I'm interested in. This is what I'm interested in. I'm interested in, you know, the issue of what's going on in Zimbabwe and the impact of that on the rest of the continent of Africa, you know, because obviously Robert Mugabe's got, you know, had a relationship with people of his generation, Pan-Africanists of his generation that fought against, the Portuguese in Angola, you know, the Cubans who came over to Angola to help, and right across that continent, you know, and that's the generation that's, if you like, that's passing on, moving on, and you've got a younger, obviously you've got military leaders in places like Zimbabwe, but you've got a younger generation all over Africa, really, that are looking towards the future, yeah, and that is what's interesting to me, not Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, whatever, doing what they do with women, if you like, or people, or men, whoever they do it with, you know, and it's a distraction, those issues really is a massive distraction from what, in my opinion, we should be talking about, you know.
Any connection with Robert Mugabe's forced resignation? I guess I've seen it referred to in different terms. People want to call this a coup. Any connection with this event? And just within the past few weeks, the attention being focused on Niger and saying that, quote unquote, terrorist activity is, you know, a problem that needs to be discussed. The soldiers that were U.S. soldiers that were killed in the area, Niger. Any connection between those events?
I've not heard. That's interesting. You could tell me about that. I've not heard about that incident. I'd like to know about that. I've personally not heard people put the two together. That would be interesting to know if there is any kind of connection there at all. Sorry. Could you tell me what happened there? So what, American? I'm assuming that was part. They were part of AFRICOM. You know, so what was that all about?
I think this was in October. So I said a few weeks ago, I guess a month ago at this point, or a little over a month ago at this point. But there were U.S. troops, four of them, I believe, that were reported killed. This is Niger, I guess, is the way that they're pronouncing it. I think one of our listeners noted that the change in pronunciation. But this attack happened and got a lot of controversy. President Trump was talking about this attack. And within the past month or so, there's been more attention and saying that having U.S. troops in this part of the world to deal with terrorism, maybe we need more troops. Maybe we need to recognize that this terrorist influence is spreading in Africa and looking at all the reasons. People are destabilized and moving around. So it's giving an opportunity for the quote unquote Boko Harams and other organizations like this to come into power and dastardly things. And we need to have troops there to, you know, put the iron fist down to control the niggers, control these sort of outbreaks.
So really what he's really saying is he wants to tighten his grip on African resources. That's what's being said. That's the subtext, isn't it? You know, we need to put American troops in the area of the African continent to compete with the Chinese to secure resources. That's what it sounds like to me. And then what you do, you then talk about, you know, the people on the continent needing you there. You're only doing it out of the goodness of your heart to help the people there. When that's, we all know, well, we should know that's a load of rubbish, right? Like, the idea is to go and secure resources. That's and try and counter the influence of competitors, i.e. China. that's really what that one's all about. You know, for me though, I've got to say, and possibly, you know, the possible answer is the corruption of African leaders. You know, on the continent of Africa, right, we don't, and I'm going to say we, I mean African people, black people, non-white people, we don't always have to be the victims here. Sorry, but a lot of Nigerians, because in London, I mean, I grew up with a lot of West Africans, right, and a lot of Nigerians that I speak to speak about the corruption of African leaders, right, and some Nigerians that I know don't even want to go back there, right? So at some point we're going to have to say, you know what, how can we, and it's an old conversation amongst Africans in London anyway, how can we bring about a system of accountability amongst African leaders? At the end of the day, right, white people, white WASPs in America, wherever white people come from, sometimes get traction in African countries due to corrupt African leaders, right? And this is the thing, and you know, and this whole, and what I'm hoping anyway is that young Africans can bring about a change of culture amongst leadership, because at the end of the day, old people die. Right. And our generation, I count myself in the younger generation, our generation grows into leadership. We have to do something different in Africa. If we're gonna stop racists from coming in, i.e. white Americans from coming in, right, we have to say, you know what, you're not, no amount of money that you're prepared to give us under the table is gonna make us betray our own people. It's not gonna happen. And at the moment, that's not necessarily the case. Do you understand? And, you know, that's not that. And this whole thing about AFRICOM coming in and having a base on the continent of Africa, right? What's that one all about? What is that all about? You know, so sorry, go on.
I mean, is my understanding the base was already there? My response is that is about the system of white supremacy. That is what domination looks like. If you're in a position of power, hey, we can go anywhere we want to and put our bases down and make sure that we can maintain our power and or expand whatever power that we have over what's happening on the planet. And just even really quick to your point, because I did think that was really, really important about the corruption. The New York Times report, they said, as did several others, I'm just, because I referenced that one earlier, that part of the reason that many wanted to see Robert Mugabe step down is because of corruption. The quick paragraph from their report, it says, in a resolution, party leaders said Mr. Mugabe should be removed for taking the advice of counter-revolutionaries and agents of neo-imperialism, all of that's in quotes. That phrase, neo-imperialism, oftentimes I find that used as a synonym for racism, white supremacy, but yeah. they did point that out with regards to corruption. I know Paul Lefaume Grant, he's been a guest on our program numerous times, and he has a whole portion in one of his more recent books where he's talking about finance and economics, where he says that is a huge problem that is stymieing us from eliminating white supremacy, the corruption. Part of me, I think under this system, when you have so many people that are deprived and have been deprived for so long and lacking basic needs and resources, and that's the position that a lot of non-white people have been kept in all over the world, it's real easy for racists, for whites to come in and bribe them and say, hey, you know, I'll let you, you know, take a few crumbs. I'll give you X amount of dollars as long as things you are, you'll look as though you are in charge. And you just make sure you keep things running in a way that is likable to our liking. And, you know, you can skim off, take whatever you want. You and your family will be well. You and, you know, whoever, pick out eight of your cronies or what have you that you want to be. It's very, very easy to manipulate that sort of situation worldwide. It seems like you have this sort of situation in place worldwide, unless I'm in error.
You know, you're absolutely correct. Here's the thing. Okay, here's the thing for me, right? It'd be interesting to know two things. It'd be interesting to know who wrote that column in that newspaper, because it is correct. It's true. And you are right. They'll use the term. They put, if it's a white man writing that column, he or she is more happy to use the term neo-colonialism or neo-imperialism, anything except for white supremacy, right? That's number one. It might not be a white person right now, I don't know, right? But if it is, that doesn't surprise me that they're going to use those two terms rather than white supremacy. What's interesting, though, is the fact that they understand what neocolonialism is, and they're quite happy to write about it, right? Because very rarely do I ever read anything written by white people where they're talking about neocolonialism, because effectively they're talking about themselves, right? So the fact that they're able to articulate all of that, if it is a white person, and I suspect it is, because very few black people will be allowed to write about neocolonialism in a white newspaper. So I mean, you know, and a lot of black people in this country, in England, don't even know what neocolonialism is anyway, right? So there is all of that. For me, so that's that. Another quite important thing for me is when we look at how culturally we as African people, as black people, do leadership, right? We as African people seem to be okay-ish with a non-accountable style of leadership, right? Where we are happy, and I use that term happy, it's a rubbish word, but I use that term anyway. We seem to be okay with non-accountable leadership, where we seem to be happy with charismatic styles of leadership, right? And what I've always say, what I say to people is that we need to move away from charisma as a prerequisite for leadership, right? You know, whereby that's a, you know, the big, you know, whereby that's a main facet of leadership, right? And we need to move towards accountable leadership and systems, a systematic way of doing things when it comes to management, when it comes to leadership and accountability, right? We need to move towards these ways of this type of thing. So that may be a little bit better at disenabling, stopping people stealing. That might still happen, but with robuster, that's not a word, but I'll use it, with more robust systems of accountability, i.e. checks and balances, I think that would be better than simply relying on someone who sits at the top of a pyramid. And that style in other words, if you do what I say, if you worship me, I will rise you up and make you a manager. In other words, just be loyal to me, and that's all you need be to get a good job in this system that I sit at the apex of. And that's because at the end of the day, if you knock off that big boss, that big man or woman, then, you know, then the whole thing falls to pieces. Or if you pay them off, then the whole thing falls to pieces. And at the moment, not only on the continent of Africa, but even when you look at, African churches, by African, I mean African-American or Jamaican Caribbean or black churches in the UK, we seem to be happy with this particular style of leadership. And what I say is that we need to move away from that to rock solid systems of African accountability. That's what, you know, whereby you are there because the people have specifically put you there. You are not a king or a queen. You are there to perform a function, and you are there for a finite period of time. And we don't have that.
Context of white supremacy. The person who wrote that New York Times report, the author is Jeffrey Moyo, M-O-Y-O. I cannot confirm, but it looks like this might be a black person. I'm going to double check, but Jeffrey Moyo, M-O-Y-O. And that was my error. He said neo-imperialism, not neo-colonialism, neo-imperialism. And it looked like he might have been quoting some of the folks in Zimbabwe who were expressing their concerns with Robert Mugabe. Just included that quote in terms of this is why we want him out, the corruption. And we think he's, you know, taking orders from neo-imperialists in terms of the corruption and him mismanaging affairs in Zimbabwe. But folks want to investigate to see that. And I would, in my view, even if a black person did write the report, which it certainly could be, I would still encourage folks, just keep an eye out, pay attention. If you can see where white people are writing about this, look at the language that's being used. Look at if they're including any of the history of what Robert Mugabe did. Just be very attentive to how this gets talked about, or if it gets talked about at all. Does this get moved to the back page and we've forgotten all about this by the time Tuesday rolls around? Folks, if you have a question or if you have input on this, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6-1 if you would like to participate. Before I get a caller, folks, if they had a question about this, just really quick, I know you said, Andrew, that you didn't have too much interest in the whole Harvey Weinstein affair and talking about Kevin Spacey and who they're accused of doing something to. Think Thomas in New York, he asked a question. Since this is getting so much attention worldwide, this is getting major attention in your part of the world as well. The BBC was having big stories on this, and they've been talking about some of the same people. The question was asked, do you think this represents some sort of shift with regards to white women getting more power or changing their role in the system, since you got a lot of white women that are making accusations against white men? In these instances, do you think that's what it is, or do you have a different assessment?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I just want to say that if any man is, and I've said this as well, you know, to women that I talk to about this, or women that want to talk to me about it, more to the point, if any man is caught sexually harassing, raping a woman, right, then you really need to find that man and lock him up in prison for a long time. Half the problem is that I think the sentences are too lenient when it comes to men who sexually harass women. I think that's a big problem. If the sentences were longer, you'd have less men doing it. It's that simple. However, right, but you know, maybe there is in your country, Gus, in the place called America, but in this country, there doesn't seem to be very many a long sentence, if any, if women are caught to be found to be lying. Do you understand? Right. There doesn't seem to be. I've never known of a woman go to prison for lying, whether or not she's been raped. You know, if I know that there's been some high profile cases of, I can't remember, there's some actor that used to be on, I think it was a TV presenter, and he got dragged through some white man, he got dragged through the courts for ages, years, and then it was found that this other famous woman was just lying. She didn't go to prison. So basically it's a win-win for a woman if you just want to lie. It's a win-win, right? Do you get what I mean? So that for me is a massive issue, right? I've heard conversation over here as to whether or not it's being used by particular feminists to advance their agenda, right? I've heard that as a conversation. Obviously, the argument coming back would be, well, you know, if this man's done this, blah 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 blah. And I totally understand that. My instinct and my feelings tell me that in this country, there is a feminist undercurrent agenda using this for some sort of advancement, some sort of gain, right? That's my, you know, that's what my senses tell me personally, right? And I say that after I've also said that any man caught doing this should be given a longer sentence than what this country currently dishes out. Do you understand? In other words, right, you know, men should have more self-control, right? in my personal opinion. And I'd go further than that, actually. I'd go further. Personally, as a form of protection for men, for African men, black men, right? You should, if you're going to meet a woman for the, this is advice, if you're going to meet a woman for the first time, meet her in public. That's number one. Number two, do not make any sexual advances to any woman that you fancy, right? You need to ask her straight up some straight questions, right? After finding out whether or not she's mad or sane, after finding out whether or not she likes the men in her family, whether or not she's got good relations with her brothers and her father, after finding out whether or not she's got good relations with her ex, her exes, after finding out whether or not she's the type of woman who has been through a round of counselling, you want to think twice about dating a woman who's been through reams and reams of counselling. After finding, and you need to know whether or not she's the type, she, you know, find out. I'll just ask her whether or not she's lost herself in a relationship. Because really, she needs to go and find herself first before she does anything with you. So that's the question, some of the questions you want to ask a woman, right? And after all of that, you need to say to her, you know, I am not going to have any form of sex with you. You need to tell me, right, point blank, you want to have sex with me. That's what you want to have it, and you want to have it now. You're not going to make any move whatsoever to have any sex with her. She's got to come and make moves to you and step to you to have sex. Otherwise, there's no sex going to happen. And even after you've done that, you have to be careful, because you've got to understand we are in the UK. We are now living in a situation where no matter what happens, you can be accused of anything and be dragged through the court, right? And it will literally mess your life up as a man. That's a fact, you know. And there is no consequences if she is found to be lying. None what, but it'll mess your life up. And that's the truth. You know, whether that's the God's honest truth. You know, so as a man, you have to do everything you can to protect yourself. All right? So, two things. If you rape someone, you should go to prison for, in my opinion, longer than what they put men in prison for. Now, on the other hand, you need to make sure that you protect yourself as a man. You know, because believe you me, there's a lot of so-called feminists and all the rest of it that have got an agenda to destroy you, right? And as a black man in this, it's a lot. Your sentence will be a lot harsher, you know. So sorry to go on a little bit, but that's the conversation here anyway.
No apologies. Context of white supremacy. I think. A sizable number of folks who classify themselves as feminists, and maybe even some others, I think, would be quite disgruntled about the notion that females lie about being raped. I think I've heard that as a very emphatic talking point, that does not exist, and that's, you know, it's a very low number of people who would do such a thing and subject themselves to all that public scrutiny and victim blaming and everything else that happens. My only response to people who say that, I certainly remember Emmett Till. And I certainly know that under the system of white supremacy, there is a long, long and ongoing history of white people falsely accusing black people of all kinds of crimes, essentially rape and sexual misconduct. That is, you know, I mean, as old and cliche as it comes in the system of white supremacy. So you'll have to forgive me and maybe even Andrew, too, if there's some suspicion about those allegations from time to time.
Sorry, Gus. You know what? If you're human, you lie. It's as simple as that. If you're human, you lie. Men lie. What? Do women not lie? Children lie. Old people lie. Human. If you're human, you lie. It's that simple. What? So, and that's it. It's very simple. So the question really is, what protections do people have from liars? That's got to be the, at some point, men have to get the and the people that experience the harshest sentences, black men, have to grapple with that fact. That's it.
I know for here in the States in terms of the legal aspect of it, you were saying. I think most people, it's their belief that sexual predators, that the law does not, that they're just, for a variety of reasons, they have what they call statute of limitations, where if you molest somebody when they're a child, if you don't report it within, you know, a number of years, it's nothing that can be done about it. Even if they did do it, even if, you know, it comes out that there's evidence and everything that they did it, once the statute of limitations is up, oh, well, nothing can be done. And I think a lot of people have just have seen lots of evidence, and particularly with Black people, that there just doesn't seem to be a lot of punishment and even a lot of vigor to go after prosecuting individuals who commit sexual crimes, particularly against Black victims. That said, the other aspect of it where you said if a female, if she makes some sort of false charge of rape, that she's been a victim of a sexual crime, if she makes a false charge, are there crimes for that? They can charge you with making a false report and what have you. And I know there was a white female in Louisiana where she said she had been abducted and was the victim of a sexual crime by some Black males. And it turned out that she made a false report. That's what they charged her for. But it's been my experience that punishment tends to be much lower than what you would get if you are found guilty of a sexual crime, much lower. It's not like you're going to get, you know, years and years and years of jail or, you know, major fines or some other form of really punitive sentencing if you are indeed found guilty of reporting someone falsely for rape, or at least I'm not aware of that being something that gets punished, where they throw the book at you, as they say. With that, let me double check, make sure folks didn't have a question. I think caller, retired firefighter, if you had a question for Andrew over in the UK, lines should be open.
Greetings to everyone within the known universe, especially those who are non-white victims of racism, white supremacy. Welcome to the cows again. Basically, I was just had a thought on the subject that I heard was being spoke on, and what I do to keep in mind is the racist white supremacist clause that comes into anything that white people make popular in their talk. In this case, the sexual violations that they're talking about. But I would say the victim's part in this to always keep the racial clause involved, meaning that, for instance, one of the popular stories in this part of the world is with this white male physician who was the physician of, I believe, the U.S. gymnastics team. If not that team, gymnastics period for over a long period of time. And he actually, I believe, was convicted of molesting large numbers of female gymnasts. Now, of course, most of these gymnasts are white females, but one of the top female gymnasts in the world is a non-white Black female. Her first name is Gabriella. I forgot her last name.
Douglas.
She made a somewhat of a counter response to one of these white female gymnasts who got some popularity on the subject of her being molested, not saying anything directly in regards to her, but something that I would say VGQ, and also that to give a viewer to look at about, she mentioned something about dress and self-respect can perhaps help you in preventing you from getting harmed in that way. And the white female basically chided her in a means to that is quite common with white females in their relationship to non-white females of attempting to, intimidate non-white females into joining them into this feminist type of thought process by saying, come on and join us. She says something like that, so to speak. You know, because I would say it is my observation that white people would attempt to either reduce to the lowest levels possible or totally ignore racism in all nine areas of activity. And I suspect that's what this white female was doing. And I'm pretty sure that is also relevant in all nine areas of activity, not just sex, as far as that's concerned, that they do that for obvious reasons, because they want it to continue. That's why it's very profitable to each and every individual white person. And that's just my thought. And maybe one of our international listeners can speak on based on what my thoughts were and how that sound to them. Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. The alleged accuser in the case with these gymnasts is Lawrence G. Nassar, N-A-S-S-A-R. Just wanted to make sure got his name on the record, because I thought that was typical and tacky, that out of all of this, where you got a white man who is accused of being a serial sexual predator, the person that is being fussed at is a black female, Gabrielle Douglas, who is not accused of doing anything but saying something that people didn't like. Andrew, did you have commentary on retired firefighters' commentary? Oh, are you with us, Andrew? Not hearing. I don't know if you hit your mute button. If you hit your mute button, we're not hearing your audio.
Oops.
Got you now.
Can you hear?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Apologies for that. Yes, you're talking about the black gymnast, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I did see a little bit of I read that on the internet. Interesting. So just so that I've got that straight, is it that she's accusing this white man of assaulting her? I didn't get the exact detail of that, because what I did read is that for some reason she's coming under some sort of fire. Is it for talking about someone, a coach, or someone assaulting her or molesting her? Is that what's going on there?
As I understand it, I think it's that a different gymnast, other than Gabrielle Douglas, she is alleging that this white doctor, Nassar, that he sexually abused her. She recently gave a public interview about all this, saying what happened and talking about the culture of this. I think he's accused of doing this to multiple people. Gabrielle Douglas, her teammate, she came out and spoke later, and she said, I'm paraphrasing, but basically she said that, you know, gymnasts should dress more modestly. You know, you don't want to wear anything too revealing to, you know, entice this sort of thing. Paraphrasing, basically. And a lot of people felt that was victim shaming. The young gymnast, she came out and said that, you know, that you can wear whatever you want. Basically, that doesn't give guys a reason or justification to sexually abuse you. And that's a terrible thing to say. It's victim shaming. That was what a lot of people, victim blaming, sorry. That was the position that a lot of people took and made her apologize and just, you know, shook their finger at her. That was the situation, as I understand it.
Right. Okay. So it's just a case of, how she should, well, she doesn't know better, does she? I mean, really, she should just, you know, advice for her in the future, if she ever listens to this show, just let white people fight out whatever they want to fight out. It's as simple as that. Don't get involved. You know, whatever they, best thing you could do with white people is stir it up. right? But anything other than that, just let them have their debate and their conversation, and just watch to see whether or not African people can get any mileage out of it. That's the way. I think that's probably the best thing to do. It's an old story, isn't it? You know, an African person, black person, chuck in their 5 cents, 5 pence, whatever you want to call it, and they just turn on her and start having to go, oh, do you know what I mean? So, I understand that that's what white people do. But, whatever white people want to have an argument about, let them argue. Do you know what I mean? Getting involved in their argument doesn't really make any sense, in my opinion. Not unless we can get mileage out of it. You know, so but it's a learning curve for her, isn't it? I mean, she's young, so that's a learning curve. That's her learning curve, you know.
I would just point this out. Another illustration, if folks recall, Gabrielle Douglas. She was, if not the most popular, she was one of the most popular Olympic athletes, gold medal athletes from the 2012 Olympics in London, right in Andrew's backyard. She was the talk of the games. They had her everywhere. And even then they were talking bad. It was, oh, look at her hair is messed up. And all these nasty comments online about her hair, this and her there is that, and her hair is this. You can go from being, oh, you are the most beloved black person on the plantation, to just another nigger in about 5 seconds. And it doesn't matter what you've done, what you accomplished, how smart you are, how much money you have. All of that is totally irrelevant in the system of white supremacy. And it even started last year at the Olympics, when they were, oh, she's a poor sport. She didn't smile enough. She wasn't supportive of her teammates. And they carried some of those same comments in when this episode happened right here. At the part of that learning curve, never, never stake your self-worth on what white people think about you, or really anybody else in the system of white supremacy, because, man, white people can look as though they like you and they're cool with you today. You are the favorite, chosen, responsible, cool Negro. And then you're just another Negro within about 5 seconds. And it's happened way too many times at this point for us to, still be confused about that. We had another person that dialed in, or several, I guess. The person at 3246, did you have a question?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the callers and the listeners, you, the host, and the international caller. Greetings to you. And so my question would be, if it is actually possible for us to solve the system of racism, white supremacy, like in a year's time, because if we put a time limit on it, if it's possible, like what exactly do you think we would do? Is it that the African-Americans and the Africans on the African continent are in contact with each other? Is it that we have to, and if it is that we have to create a Pan-Africa, then how do we create the Pan-Africa? Is it that we have to contact the chiefs, the kings, or is it the politicians, or is it the general population? My question is, if we were able to solve this problem in a year, what is it that we would be doing to solve that problem?
Can you hear me, Goss?
Yes, sir.
In my opinion, to bring about the system, to bring about an end to the system of race and white supremacy and replace it with a system of justice, my personal opinion is that it's not about what white people will do or what will not do. It's about what we are going to do differently. It's about what we are going to do differently. You know, they will always be doing, they will, we cannot, I don't believe that African people, non-white people, black people can rely on white people changing. White culture is racism, white supremacy. That it is as simple as that, right? So therefore, it's about what, in my opinion, it's about what we are going to do differently. And a big issue that we have at the moment, in my opinion, stopping that happening, what you're asking is our cultural practice. In other words, as Neely Fuller says, the things we do every day, Do you understand? The things we do every day, that's our culture. You know, the things we do every day, that is what's stopping us from ending race and white supremacy. We have to change what we do every day. You know, we literally have to change it. So in terms of what I eat, you know, simple example, in terms of what I eat, am I eating what an old friend of mine, who's a GP, a general practitioner, family doctor, are we eating what she calls heart attack food? You know, am I eating food which is going to kill me tomorrow? Or am I eating healthy food? That's number one. I mean, that's just personal. Am I going out and exercising on at least 3 or 4 times a week? This is personal stuff to keep my brain in shape. Or am I smoking weed, right, non-stop like my brother used to do? I don't smoke it because it's nonsense, right? So if that's my culture, if that's what I do every day, then what message am I giving to my children? Because ending race and white supremacy and keeping it ended is a generational thing. I have to give positive messages to my children. You know, the books that I read, right? Am I taking in media that is poison, right? What am I taking into my mind, right? As well as that, how do I view systems, structures, and leadership? Do I see those things as worthy to be held up, or am I consistently trying to circumvent systems, structure, and leadership myself? What you'll find is that a lot of African people try to consistently circumvent these things, right? And we have to make sure that we respect these things, we uphold these things, and we seek to make sure that these systems, strategy, leadership, strategic planning is central to our lives and central to strategic leadership, right? For African people, we need to teach, right, that what needs to be central to every strategic plan, right, is the African person themselves. In other words, right, we put ourselves at the center and number one, and everybody else, right, all other peoples, right, revolve around our central plan, which is us for us going forward. In other words, so, you know, some people would, you know, Marcus Garvey used to talk about race first, right? But what I'm saying is that in order to end white supremacy, we need to place value on ourselves. You know, I need to place value on people that look like me, and I need to place value on systems that promote who we are everywhere. Do you understand? What white people do, they put specific value on them and the promotion of them everywhere at cost to everybody and everything else, right? You know, what we need to do is put ourselves at the center of any of a strategic plan to advance African, black, non-white interests globally. You know, that's what we need. First of all, we have to understand what strategic planning is, and we have to be, everybody has to be held accountable to a plan. You know, when I go to work, right, if I don't do my job within the strategic plan of my school, I'm out, right? And that's the way it needs to be in your personal life, let alone your family life with your wife and your children, and then take that further to your community, if you like, and then take it into your business. And you know, there needs to be rock solid strategic planning across the board. And then everybody needs to be held accountable to that. In other words, if you're not doing your job within your African organization, you need to be removed. You know, so for me, going back to what I said before about this whole sort of chief system, which is a white construct anyway, but you know, the whole thing about charismatic leadership and this kind of thing, forget that. You know, because it doesn't, because all you've got to do is cut that head off. You know, if you've got a strategic plan and everybody operates within it, then really you could, it's very difficult to break that. Very difficult. You've got to really, an enemy's got to go quite far to break that. But it's easy to just simply break a feudal kingdom. You just chop the head off. And we need to understand the difference between feudalism, that's the word, don't get me wrong. We need to understand the difference between charismatic leadership and a strategic planned organizational planning. The two are not the same. One, you sit down in a strategic plan and you think about all of the issues, if you like, you do a SWOT analysis, and you can plan that far 500 years into the future, or 50 years into the future, or 10 years into the future. You take everything into account, you plan it, and you do it. Everyone's got a part, and you know, it's malleable, it's pliable, yes, but the opposite to that is you just ingratiate yourself to the top man or woman, and as long as you ingratiate yourself enough, then you can rise up in his little kingdom. And that's no good. That is no good for ending white supremacy, and that's what we have at the moment.
Context of white supremacy. Appreciate that, Mhandisi. I want to just make sure I can get the other folks who dialed in with a question really quick. The caller at 2899-2899. Did you have a question, Andrew, or commentary on what we've been talking about this afternoon, evening?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good day, Gus and Andrew. Thank you for calling in from across the waters there. I do have some commentary, and hopefully it leads to a question after I say it. I found your segue from Neely Fuller Jr.'s observation or statement that racism, white supremacy would remain even if the existence of Caucasian people were to cease totally, even right now. As evidence, that your conversation with him made me recall an article where the public restrooms were, the bathroom, the paper dispensers, and the water faucet sensors, when they went automated, were programmed to reject skin color of a certain dark hue, of a certain hue that was, you know, black people's skin. So I thought that and found that interesting that they...
It was, I'm sorry, it was, you said what now? The faucet would, so like it wouldn't work if a black person went to use the faucet, the water wouldn't turn on?
Yes, sir. Good.
Wow.
The valve would close. As soon as they would put their hands, the paper dispenser wouldn't dispense paper, or the water wouldn't dispense water. And I just thought that was an excellent example of what you brought up there with Stephen Roberts, machine learning. And just to kind of comment on the Zimbabwe coup, I've been reading that scenario for a little bit here the last few days. I've been comparing the AP News, their source of how they're writing it, to other, you know, like American news and stuff. And I would say the answer to Andrew's question about if this may be a Pan-African backed support, the way it reads it, I would think it probably is, because the Central Committee and the ZANU-PF, along with the Liberation Army, ran by Chris Mustavagwa, I think that's his name, is supposedly mainly behind this. And I recall reading that earlier when this first started, that the commander, the army commander, he made a comment saying that they actually were going in to uproot any people within the Mugabe cabinet that may have been involved in illegal activity. That's what they initially started this as. And it immediately went into what we have been reading lately. So maybe it is a people's coup is what I'm saying, because there's a lot of native support. If you read some of the articles where some of the native people there are saying they want them out, and if they had the opportunity, they could. They envision about 5,000 people being rounded up out of his cabinet just on that. So that's some of the information I gathered. And before I go, I wanted to say something about the Weinstein situation. And this is a question to both you and Andrew. Considering everything there, you got Gloria Allred with 50 plus victims. She went to the Weinstein production company and asked them to set up a fund for the victims. You don't even have a conviction yet. No charges, no nothing. She wants the production company to set up a fund with several million dollars in it to access. I do see this as a white woman power grab. And I have had this conversation with other people. What I fear, though, and this is my question to you guys, do you think this will have the negative effect on Bill Cosby, considering R. Kelly and a few other guys got away they didn't get a chance to get them. And thank you, I'll meet my line.
No, I don't know if you've been keeping up with the Bill Cosby situation. I think he has a retrial that will be coming up later. Do you think this will...
January.
So he has about 2 months, month and a half or so. How do you think this will impact his case, Andrew?
That's an interesting question. I think negatively. You can't say for sure, but obviously it's not meant to, is it? But you know, sometimes the way these things tend to operate, I think, is that the cultural sort of scripts that emanate from the media and from a general sort of points of view within circles of friends and all the rest of it. And the judge has got a circle of friends, and the judge sits down and does watch TV and that sort of thing. If there's a scale of sentencing, I wouldn't be surprised if whatever he ended up getting wasn't at the top end of that scale, So I would think that it would have an effect on the trial, on the sentencing, for those reasons, and also whether or not other women may or may not come out of the woodwork as well. The general air right now is for women and men to remember that they had been molested or sexually assaulted years and years and years and years and years ago. For some reason they felt scared to come forward then, or just didn't come forward, or were not disgruntled enough to come forward, or felt threatened to come forward, or for whatever reason didn't come forward apparently. And now is the, for them is the right time to sort of come forward for whatever reason. On television, I've heard that, now they feel empowered to come forward. So for those two reasons, I can imagine it having an effect on his case, and this is why I say, you as a man, you have to do everything you can to protect yourself from getting into situations where people can point the finger at you and accuse you of stuff. People are going to, if you're black, the way I see it is that if you're a black man, that's going to happen anyway. Right. But nonetheless, we've got to do what we can to stop ourselves from getting into certain situations with particular women. Right. That's just the way I see it. And, so if you leave yourself wide open to, because, you've got people like Bill Cosby, you've got all these famous people. Right. But they, most of these famous people live a slightly more high maintenance life than most of us, And it's on our level, right, where, possibly how it affects us as poorer individuals, that would be an interesting conversation. How can I protect myself from what women may or may not say about me? Do you know what I mean? How vulnerable am I from being accused of doing rape or molestation or whatever? How vulnerable am I? Are there any protections in law, right, to stop women lying about things I've done? Yes or no? I've had nobody answer that question for me. What is it to stop anyone from just lying about me and putting me in prison? What's to stop? Where are the checks and balances in that? Am I guilty until somehow I can be proved innocent from some white person somewhere? No one's had that kind of a conversation with me personally.
I'm reminded, I'm digging through my bookshelf here, the book Picking Cotton, Our Memoir of Injustice and Redemption by Jennifer Thompson Canino and Ronald Cotton. Jennifer Thompson Canino, white woman, suspected racist. She reported that she was raped, that a black guy did it. They arrested Ronald Cotton. He served 11 years in prison before they found out they had made an oops, and Ronald Cotton never raped anyone. But that was after he had already served 11 years. And I'm reminded of Dr. Curry's work, where he says consistently where all of the folks, and oftentimes it'll be whites, frequently white women, who say, "Oh my goodness, Andrew, you're a barbarian out here talking about people lie about rape and that doesn't happen, or it certainly happens a very small percentage of the time. Dr. Curry pointed out the research where you have an extremely high percentage. In fact, the highest group, the group with the highest rate of exonerations for rape, where it turns out that they did not rape anyone and DNA later exonerated them, black males by far. So, yeah, Picking Cotton, that is a book that I have read, Picking Cotton. Wow. Where he basically goes through like a chronicle of his 11 years of being in greater confinement. He didn't say anything about General Hospital helping him get through his experience. Folks who heard the program yesterday know what that means. The person who dialed in, I guess you're on a headset or something of that nature. If you had a question, comment you wanted to get in, line should be open.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What's going on? I was just wanted to add, you know, a couple of statements to what was said. I was reading this book by Dr. Clyde Anderson called "The Black History Reader," and I think it touches a little bit on the whole thing that's going on with Gabby or whatever. It's this chapter talks about this policy that was in America called mandatory manumission. Have you heard of that before?
Let's hear it. Hello?
Are you still
there? Oh, let's hear it.
It was basically a law back in the 1700s that basically granted freedom to slaves that basically for revolts, you know. It's on record that according to the law policies, recorded records, that with this policy in place, it foiled over 300 slave revolts. And and part of the book, he talks about how basically that's really what's going on now as far as like with the black leadership, you know, basically keeping, you know, the black leadership as far as like church ministers, celebrities, black politicians. And I was just thinking about that when I was thinking about the Mugabe situation. I don't know how a lot of other black people feel about it, but the fact that he's, I don't know where he stands at, but, you know, the fact that it's even presidents in Africa, you know, like presidents and senators and congressmen in Africa, that just never, you know, felt right to me, you know, presidents and stuff. To me, that's a white supremacist concept, you know what I'm saying? So I just wanted to know what your thoughts on as far as like even having like black presidents or, you know, non-white presidents or, you know, politicians, congressmen. Do they really do any good for the general non-black population?
I guess my quick thought would be that we heard a lot of this while President Obama was in office, where people with President Obama and with black enforcement officials, people saying basically the same thing, that President Obama didn't really benefit black people directly, him being in that position for those 8 years. And the same thing with black enforcement officials, that doesn't really do much to mitigate how enforcement officers treat black people in the global system of white supremacy. The position that I take and what you said is correct. I just, in my view, I just say that all the leaders of black people, non-white people, are white, and understanding that any of these non-white people, regardless of what position or title that they have to answer to racist man, racist woman, just like I do. And so that keeps me from having unrealistic expectations about what any of these people anywhere in the world can do under the current circumstances. However, just in my view, that doesn't mean that black people should not take these positions. Sometimes you can take those positions, learn some things. Sometimes you can take those positions and maybe that puts you in a more advantageous position to do other constructive things. Maybe not. Maybe it's just a more comfortable seat on the plantation. whatever it is, we certainly have seen the system of white supremacy where all of those positions have been filled by whites, and that didn't help us solve the problem either. So I don't have a problem with a individual taking any of those posts, if it's a political appointment, presidency, member of Congress, whatever the case is. My position, just make sure that that does not become confused with, oh, we don't have a system of white supremacy, or this person doesn't have to answer to it, anything like that. We still have the system. Whites can give up these spots to a black person anytime they want to, as long as it doesn't mess up their system, which obviously it has not. I could be in error. Andrew, did you have thoughts on his question?
If you're talking about whether or not or the benefits of African people that take up and hold positions in white structures, that's what I got from what you're saying. Am I on the right track in terms of what you're asking?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Like the notion of, you know, being a black quote unquote president or a black congressman, you know, like the whole title just, you know, never felt right, you know. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if that's what you're asking, then personally, I have no issue with it at all. It doesn't mean, you know, it's, I mean, what I do look for is whether or not the person has got a mind to do anything for African people, for black people. And if they haven't, then in terms of my thinking, I just basically start thinking about something else, you know. So in this country, for example, you've got a smattering, you've got a handful of black politicians, you know, black people that are in the Houses of Parliament. However, not all of them, from looking at their work, the little bit that I know about, not all of them have got the interests of African people at heart. What some of them tend to say is, I got elected by, not just by African people, not just by black people, but I got elected by everybody in that area. Unlike some parts of America, you know, London is very mixed. When, you know, last year I went to Washington, you had whole areas that where just black people lived. But in the UK, you haven't really got that. Do you get what I mean? You've got some places where a lot of Asians live. Asians tend to concentrate in particular areas. However, in 2017, black people don't really do that anymore. 30 years ago, yeah, in Brixton, it was all mainly black. But, you know, those days are gone. Brixton now it's a very mixed area. It's more white than black because all the black people have been priced out. Black leaders that it's difficult for black leaders to have a African centric mindset. That's number one, because they went to school in a racist country. That's number one. Even if they've got an African centered mindset, for them to be elected by white people, how's that going to happen? You know, and thirdly, I think Barack Obama, yes, it seems to me that he wanted Medicare Obamacare, because it seems to me that that would benefit a lot of African Americans who have less money than white people. And that's the reason it seems to me that the current president wants to tear it down and wants to demolish it. So in this country, we had Bernie Grant, who was actually married to a white person, which is interesting, but at least he was African centered. And then you got other people like Chuka Amuna, who, from what he says and does, appears to me to be less sort of outwardly willing to do things that benefit African black people when he's black, right? And then you've got other people like Diane Abbott, who had a brilliant conference, yearly conference up until recently, called London Schools and the Black Child. You know, really good conferences that focused on trying to uplift the exam results of African children in London, right? So in the UK, it's a very mixed bag in terms of what Africans use leadership, how Africans whether or not Africans use leadership in the UK to benefit African people. It's a very mixed picture, you know. But what I would say, in my opinion, in general, there's very little being done by Africans that have any kind of leadership for different reasons, really, you know, for different reasons. But nonetheless, you know, you get one life. We're on planet Earth for one life. You've got to make it count. And as far as I'm concerned, to make it count means, you know, basically doing something for African people. Doing something for African people equals ending white supremacy or moving towards ending white supremacy. Do you know what I mean? And so, yeah, that's it.
Context of white supremacy. Make sure I remind folks, we'll be here on Wednesday. We'll have Mr. William Clark will be on the program, former firefighter in Florida. I think Andrew has visited the great state of Florida as well. But it'll be normal program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific this coming Wednesday. We'll talk about some of the white supremacy that he experienced as a firefighter. These are supposed to be some of the greatest. That might even be an example of what you were talking about. Black people in these types of positions, police officer, president, congressperson, senator, whatever it is. Is that beneficial? Should we not be in those positions? I guess all I would add to that, I think you were saying also that just even the terms like president or senator, congressperson, that just even those terms to you seem to be white concepts, which may in fact be true. The only thing that I would add to that is it, in my view, it is the system of white supremacy. If that were not here, it probably wouldn't matter if these individuals were still called president, if we did not have a system of racism. And as long as the system of white supremacy is here, they could easily change the names of those titles. And they might even come to that because there's a growing push of people saying that, you know, because some of the times they'll say congressmen. And so they're saying that that's patriarchal, that's sexist. So they might come to strike some of those terms so that you no longer have congressmen or congresswoman and that sort of thing. They might come to change those terms, but you still have the system of white supremacy, which would not really fundamentally change much of anything. We would just be using different labels to call these people. The other thing that I was going to point out as well with regards to, and it, all of it just goes back to, I think it's important. I think the error begins when we're referencing black people as quote unquote leaders. It suggests that these people have more power than they do under a system of white supremacy. I think Andrew was talking about Diane Abbott and some of these other black people and the black people. These are black politicians in the UK and the difficulty that they have getting things done. Diane Abbott is always in the news for somebody calling her a nigger or a monkey or all kinds of vile things. She came out and gave a press conference not that long ago this year where she was talking about exactly what I just said, how many times she's been called a nigger and how many times she's been threatened because she's black. That's the system of white supremacy. It's just it makes it very, very difficult for black people individually, collectively to get things done, even if they did have the greatest intentions and the greatest plans to help black people and to solve this problem. Whites are going to do everything they can to totally sabotage that. And most often they have been very, very successful. That's why I think it's very, very important just recognizing that all of the lead. That's something Mr. Fuller says that I just don't think people grasp. All of the leaders of black people at this time are white. And that would be true as long as the system of white supremacy exists. And it gets us out of that mode of looking to a black person to tell us what to do, where you start looking logic so that I can understand things for myself and I can get things going myself. I'm not looking for President Obama or some politician or some minister or whoever it is to get things done to solve our problems. I'm going out here to get things done and solve my problems. We have about, and this is the shorter program for folks who didn't know, we don't do the 3 hours since this is early and what have you. We will be back on Wednesday for normal time. I was going to make time to talk about the AI and artificial intelligence. That was why I started with that clip at the beginning, but we are running down in time. I almost want to wait because we feel like we could do a whole program on it. I guess I'll ask one quick question. With all of the advances, they're talking about having self-driving cars, very soon, and all of they matter of fact, they have a new medical breakthrough, as they call it, where they give you a device, you ingest something, and it sends feedback to your doctor about whether or not you've taken your medication. Like, it knows whether or not you're following the prescriptions. And I guess they can harass you, or, you know, wag your finger in your face when you go back for your checkup that you haven't been doing what you're supposed to do. How do you think all of these advances, especially the self-driving cars, how do you think that's going to strengthen or weaken the system of white supremacy moving forward as all this technology becomes more widespread?
Is that a question to me, Gus?
Yes, sir.
Okay. White people, in my opinion, you know, white people who are racist, white supremacists, and by the way, any white person listening to this who is not a racist, not a white supremacist, you know, I'm not talking about them. It's the people who know that they're racist and white supremacists. They're the ones I'm talking about. Thought I'd get that in there. But anyway, white people who are racist and white supremacists, right, what they're going to use it to try and strengthen the system, because there's less of them on the planet, and there appears to, you know, it seems as if, looking at white media, it seems as if their birth rate is not as strong as it used to be, right? It means that they've got to do things by remote control. Do you understand? In other words, it seems that they've got to set up a self-driving, self-governing systems of control. Yeah, AI is not really artificial intelligence. In other words, AI does not stand apart from a racist mind, does it? So artificial intelligence is really just a tentacle. It's really just tentacle of white control. Does that make sense? A good way of understanding that is when you look at a search engine, when you look at Google or any other sort of search engine made by white people. If you put in certain words, it brings up certain things. Yeah. So if you put in, God, what was it? It's something on TV the other day. You know, they put in certain words and certain negative things came up about African people, about black people, right? That, and that's meant to be a form of AI, isn't it? Yeah. Search engines are meant to be a form of AI. That's what you're looking at. Yeah. That is exactly what you're looking at. So AI doesn't mean anything, right? AI created by racists is a form of control. That's all it is. And if we're talking about AI, how it's going to manifest itself in self-driving cars, AI, how it's going to manifest itself anywhere, is a form of control by the puppet master, i.e. the racist, the top racist, sitting somewhere away to help him, he or she, control what's going on planet Earth. So really, I believe non-white people, African people especially, need to destroy AI, not use AI as it is constructed, if it is constructed by racists. It's important. We don't want to be controlled by remote, right? You know, and so we need to be a lot more mindful about what we ingest, what we take into our lives, what mechanisms we use to control our lives, you know. And so things like smartphones, things like anything controlled or operated or run by white people, we need to be very mindful of it. And, I really just not use it. And we need to get into what we need to do is create these systems for ourselves. So we need to encourage Africans who get into manufacturing, research and development, engineering. We need to promote this, seek it out, use it. And do it ourselves. We can create these systems for ourselves to be in direct competition, right, with the racists, in my opinion.
Context of white supremacy. That is a great note of encouragement to conclude with, to motivate black people. I look at that in the same vein as doctors, scientists, really all of that is in STEM, to get more black people using their brain computers so that we can have black brilliance, engineering products that will perhaps help us permanently solve the problem, racist man, racist woman, racist child. But this is a topic we'll return to when we have adequate time to explore it fully. Thank Andrew for hanging out, enjoying or spending some of his Sunday evening with us. Always a pleasure to have him on the program. Bummed that June Allen and Mary, Mr. Fox, Jude, some of our other regular listeners who are outside the States couldn't be with us, but they definitely have been listening, and hopefully we'll have a good chunk of them back with us next month, our last Sunday Global Talk on Racism of the Year. It'll be on December 17th next month, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, 8 p.m. London time. That'll be next month. Hope it was a constructive investment of your, I guess, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, depending on where you happen to be in the world. Again, we'll be here this coming Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Mr. William Clark. Again, there is an issue with the iTunes feed uploading. The archives will all be available at Black Talk Radio Network. They'll be available at SoundCloud, YouTube. We'll make them readily available, so it shouldn't be a problem. For folks to make sure that they have access to the content. If you cannot find something in the archives, drop an email and we will help out. But I'll make sure I post on Facebook, Twitter, the access to SoundCloud, Black Talk Radio Network, so you can access any of the archived content easily. That said, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. With all of the terror that we are facing worldwide, I think it would be in our best interest. I think even Andrew said when his brother, I think he used past tense, used to smoke cannabis all day long, but it seems like now he's doing more constructive things, using his brain computer to be active, maybe even to do some of the AI stuff or developing or learning something that's constructive that would benefit Black people. I think that's where our focus should be. There's too much evidence that race soldiers have terrorized Black people and taken advantage of us when we've been intoxicated and not thinking clearly, not able to make great decisions. Dr. Welsing, Dr. Claude Anderson, and many others, I think they would strongly promote sobriety, encourage us to take care of ourselves as best we can. Buckle up if you're going to be in a vehicle anywhere in the world. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. Buckle up, be sober if you're traveling out and about. Easy things we can do to minimize problems. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.